Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
You're listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, now part of the ChairShot Radio Network, on thechairshot.com. Remember, always use your head.
You look like a dude who should be pumping my fucking gas.
This isn't doing it for me. I'm not getting enjoyment out of this.
He was a before the bell rings all-star.
All right, everybody. It is Thursday night, November 7th, 2024. We are fully into November. Edmund Fitzgerald season, if you celebrate. This is the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the ChairShot Radio Network. You can find us, as always, on thechairshot.com and everywhere that you listen to your podcasts, all your favorite podcasting platforms. From the Pod Cave, I am the man with the award-winning and holy beard DJ. I'm going to go around the room and introduce this cast of characters like I always do. Starting with the host of the Rob the Genius podcast, he is the minister of truth, the father of facts and figures, the deacon of data, the official shoot bear of the Mindless Wrestling podcast. He is Ray Cash's daddy, a man with a freshly shaved head and the golden shovel. Mr. Rob, how are you, sir?
Good to be back. And yeah, I had to cut the hair because it was getting out of control.
I'm probably about 2 or 3 weeks from that myself, sir. And the resident high flyer of the Mindless Wrestling podcast, he hails from the Purple Haze and Cloud Nine. He is Bucky's tag team partner, a man destined to go through a barbershop window. And as I saw him a moment ago, another guy who may be desperately close to a haircut. Jason, sir, how are you?
It's close. It's almost time.
It's getting close, Bub. I saw you for a second and you were looking very, very John Wick. Very yeah. John Wick. You had the little facial scrub going on. You had the long hair kind of framing your face.
Yeah, it's getting to that point where I'm either going to let it rip and do a ponytail or a man bun again, or, you know, just rip it all off, shave it all off and start over.
Hey, at least you still got hair, Bubba. Mother Nature's been taking mine for about 20 years, and I finally, about 12 years ago, tapped out and said, screw it, I'm done, and I just started shaving it on the regular. I grew it out one time, and I looked like a guy who was desperately trying to save his hair. So
I'll tell you, man. Though you lucked out in the skull department. I will remind you that every single time you bemoan your bald status, you lucked the fuck out in the skull department because you look good bald. Some of us have like
so
little heads and weird little fucking things. No, man, you it could be way worse for you, my friend. You did okay.
And thankfully the beard works with it, because if I shave the beard, it just looks awkward. Like the head is still fine, but I have like this long, like elongated head. So the beard kind of offsets everything.
Well, you don't want to look like an alien.
No, then, and that's, you saw Coneheads, right?
Oh yeah.
That's kind of what it looks like when I shave the award winning beard. It's not far off.
Ouch.
All right, so we've got a heck of a show lined up for you this week. We collectively decided, given, you know, the week and the mood and everything, we wanted to kind of lighten things up, make things a little fun, step outside of our comfort zone and outside of our lane a little bit and do some different things. We are going to talk a little bit of wrestling. First thing we're going to get into here tonight is going to be the recent NXT releases. Then we are going to do our DC Animated Universe Top 5. That was actually suggested by one of our friends in our Discord chat group. I believe it was Nicole, who has been a guest host on this show a couple of times. So we thank her for that. And then we're going to do something. I want to thank the guys from 3 Count Thursday on the Blue Sky social media app. They threw out a question. And we're going to talk about that here tonight, and I don't want the guys to feel like we're ripping them off, but I thought it was a great topic. They asked, if you're drinking a beverage that's in a 20-ounce container or smaller, bottle, can, etc., do you pour it in a cup or do you drink it from the container? the three of us are going to break that down again. And I do, again, I do want to credit the guys over at Three Count Thursday for throwing that question out there. It's just given us an incredible topic to talk about. So we're looking forward to doing that. Then Rob had a topic, fictional characters and or actors slash actresses who we think might have made or would make good professional wrestlers. And then at the tail end of the whole thing, that segued into a watch along of one of my favorite movies from the 80s. And I'm going to leave you guys hanging on that cliffhanger. We're going to get into that at the tail end of the show. First, let's get in here. NXT releases. So because this week has been wild, were these releases last week or this week?
It was last week. Was
last week. Okay. The last 7 days, guys, has been a fucking blur. NXT released now, and I want to clarify this because this is the information as I know it. Tegan Nox, Indy Hartwell, and Baron Corbin. Now, Tegan Nox and Indy Hartwell, I believe, were straight out released, whereas with Baron Corbin, his contract was up and they just didn't renew. So if I'm wrong on that, one of you two correct me, but Rob's shaking his head, so I think that I've read that correctly.
Yes.
So it's, I want to start briefly with Tegan because this is probably the one I have the least to say about. It's unfortunate. She looked to be a really hot prospect in the first Mae Young Classic. Unfortunately, she had back-to-back knee injuries that sidelined her for the better part of at least 2 years. And I just don't think she ever got back in that lane to, and by that point, women had passed her and lapped her and then lapped her again, which is unfortunate. And she just never got out of the blocks in any way, shape, or form. And while that's unfortunate, we've talked about that on this show. If you're in a lane and that lane is not somebody super, super critical to WWE programming and you get injured, you fall out of that lane very, very quickly. And it's extremely hard in such a shark infested, competitive natured business to get back in that lane and stand out. So as much as,
Jason. It's not just shark infested waters. The WWE is a shark. It needs to keep moving or it will die. So it's like we can't wait around for this person to just plug back into this story in 3 months. We have to move. So it's not all, you know, them being heartless and awful.
And the big story that they could have used her with was the friendship relationship slash betrayal of Dakota Kai. But that was an NXT story from 3 years ago. And now Dakota Kai's injured, which is, you know, makes everything a moot point anyway. But Dakota Kai had her own thing. She just wove herself right into the tapestry of damage control and found herself, again, a lane on WWE programming that unfortunately didn't include Tegan Nox.
Yeah. I mean, they tried hard. They tried with her and, you know, she blew her knee both times.
It sucks for her. It really does.
It sucks for everybody. But you, like, for all the reasons you laid out, like, DJ, this is not Make-A-Wish. This is not, you know, a charity. We got to keep moving. So, you know, we've invested about what we're going to invest at this point. I'm sure it's their perspective.
Yeah.
And it just sucks. It just sucks all the way around. And
oh, go ahead.
On our feet.
Yeah.
I think in her case, I mean, the injuries obviously derailed everything, but then they didn't find her a character on the main roster.
That was bad.
She's just rainbow haired girl.
She was just
rainbow haired girl.
And that's literally all that she was. And they didn't, you know, like she had no character. And that's not on her.
That's on them, because as we know from Chelsea Green, she could be, you know, pitching a million things to them, and they just went, no, no, no. But okay, at that point, you got to give her something. You can't just go up and say, slap her on the butt and say, all right, go.
Well, it may also be like a Peyton Royce situation where they looked at her, because a lot of times I know we're not in the Vince era anymore, but a lot of times what Vince would do is like, okay, what are your talents? What do you do? Let's accentuate that. And Peyton was like, well, I don't do much. I'm kind of boring. And we don't know if this is a similar situation where Tegan just had
nothing creatively. It's like, okay, who are you? What do you do? Well, I don't know.
I'm a pro wrestler and I pro wrestle. Well, that's great on the Turner, you know, family of networks.
Yeah.
That works great over there. Doesn't work over here.
Go ahead, Rob. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I just, ultimately, they never came, she never had any type of character. And that, I mean, so nothing caught on. She was just, she came out there and she worked matches. And, you know, there was never anything for the audience to catch on to her with. And so it's kind of hard to do that. I mean, even you can be a great wrestler, but if you have literally no character, then the audience has nothing. And
right.
I mean,
but again, that's on WWE in a way, because
yes, it is.
Not always. Sometimes
they say when pro wrestler guy be or gal or whatever, being pro wrestler person works, they'll let you run with it. I mean, hello Adam Cole, you know, hello a few other people, but like, it was very clearly not working. She was not latching on to the audience. Like, no, the audience was not latching on to her. Okay, you gotta give her something. I don't care if you get her out in a ball gown and say, you're a princess now, go figure it out. Seriously, that would have been better than fucking nothing.
No. Yeah. Speaking of that, I want to move into the next one, because this one I took a little hard. Indy Hartwell. Indy Hartwell has been one when I kind of have my eye on her for a couple of years now. She's been an absolute just delight at all the NXT house shows that I've gone to, and she's worked most of them. Great-looking talent, great talent in the ring. She's damn near 6 foot tall, statuesque. Just, to me, checks off most of the boxes. And she was one that I was really, really hopeful for, that when they brought her up to the main roster. And I think the problem with her ended up being twofold. And one, she was like forever Candice LeRae's bridesmaid. And that's okay at the NXT level. But when we get up to the main roster, and to be fair, they did more with her than they did with Tegan. They gave Indy a little bit more. But
when was the way? Was that 2023, the way?
It was 21-22 when they were doing the Gargano way.
Yeah.
She has been Candice LeRae's understudy since 2022, and nothing has changed.
Yeah.
Like, so, she had that brief singles run, obviously, in NXT, and she did great and all that, so, and the, like, and then you bring it up to the main roster. Again, it's on. This one's on WWE. I don't know if we could have turned Indy Hartwell into the next big women's wrestler, but you didn't fucking try. So,
and I think at the end of the day, it's hard to say, well, this isn't working for us when you did nothing. And at least, again, we're looking at this from our little, as Jason likes to say, our little 10,000 foot view, you know, right, from our perch. So maybe there's something backstage we didn't see. Optically, they looked at it differently than we did. I just, for me, Indy Hartwell being released stinks, because I really, really liked her. I thought she had all the tools to be something. I do think that she may have been limited in what she could do as far as a character goes. When you look at, because she's one half of one of the greatest wrestling weddings in recent memory. With, yes, again, wrapping up the whole Gargano way storyline with Dexter Lumis. But
Dexter Morgan, that's another guy.
Yeah, God bless. I'm all over the road. But Dexter's personality kind of made that what it was, given the fact that he didn't say anything, and it just his mannerisms and all that. And for her part, she did great.
I was going to say, the way, because we all know one of my favorite dynamics in comedy and anything is, you know, the straight man and the whatever. But she played off him so well and filled in the gaps of his silence and his,
yes,
like, not, yes, doing anything. She was fucking awesome, man.
She was, which, and now unfortunately he's tied up with the Wyatt Six.
I'm on a roll now, sorry. So that tells me that she has it in her. So you got her to the main roster and you said, hey, you're Candace's daughter again.
Yeah.
What the fuck? What are you doing? Well,
I think that was also partially because you can't put her with Dexter because obviously they've had Dexter earmarked for, you know, when Bray was still alive, he was earmarked for that version of the Wyatt Six. When Bray passed, obviously Dexter got put on a very long hold until they could figure out what they were going to do. And then with Bo Dallas finally realizing Bray's vision, we can bring Dexter back into the fold. Maybe you could have found a way to work into that, but they have turned the Dexter Lumis character so far away from what he was in NXT. Now he's got the dreads. He's got a little bit of the face paint. He's got the mask. It's Dexter Lumis, but it's an entirely repackaged version. So it draws away from that character if you revisit the index storyline, so to speak. I think it takes away from that storyline. So there was really no place for her there. And it's, let me be clear, it stinks. I hate it. I like her, but in my head, I'm also thinking she's not even 30. She could go play around on the indies, go to AEW, go to TNA. She'd be perfect in TNA. Go there, find yourself, come back in 2 to 5 years, you know, and so let's see what you got. Because she's definitely a girl. I think that I'm planting my flag. I think Indy Hartwell ends up back in WWE at some point before her career ends.
I hope okay. So, man.
So for me, she's another one. Like I said, she got to the main roster, and they, like y'all said, she was Candice LeRae's understudy. And then not only that, they've got jobbed out a lot.
They did. That's why when they started doing something with Candace, I'm like, okay, that came out of left field. I'm happy for her. I'm glad they're doing something with Candace because I think she's amazing. But it was literally like they jobbed them out. She's the speed champ. What?
Because this happened like twice last year. Like they both lost to Rhea Ripley in back-to-back weeks in like really short order. Like 1 week she beat Candace, the next week she beat Indy, and it was like 2 minutes, both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then later on that year, they both, back-to-back weeks, they both got knocked out by Xia Li.
Yeah.
And
they were jobbers.
Jobbers. Yeah, and that's how they were being booked.
Yep.
And so when I saw that happen, I was like, oh, shit. You know.
Yes, obviously they're not fucking jobbers. But they were being booked like this for a long time.
And even this most recent thing that they did, what happened? Like, I mean, you know, Candace got that one pin on Bayley, but then what happens? The next 2 weeks, they're jobbing.
Whipping girls. Yeah.
And so that somebody there didn't see it for them, really. And
at least her.
And it, yeah, cause I guess now Candace is probably safe because they're pushing Johnny and all of that. But they didn't see it with her. They booked both of them like jobbers. It's hard to come back from that. Like it's really hard. Like, you know, we say like, you know, wins and losses don't matter. I mean, we've said this before, individual wins and losses don't matter. When you get booked on TV to lose all the time, that shit matters.
Yeah. It does, and it makes you look a certain way.
Yeah, and...
Yep, and especially to the casuals. Like, it's like, oh, why should I take this person seriously? Like, you know, they don't know. They don't know that Candice LeRae once took a Young Buck, you know, super kick a thumbtack super kick party to the face. Like, they don't know that about her. She's just, you know, Johnny's wife and, you know, a pretty good wrestler, and now she's losing a lot. Okay.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate, but that's what it is. And once that happens, I mean, if that gets set in stone with people, then it's hard, really. to get out of that. And again, they didn't give her a character either. Cause like Chelsea Green has a character that is, you know, it revolves around her doing wacky stuff and getting foiled again and foiled again and foiled again. So, you know, you can have her lose a bunch of matches because it's part of the gimmick. Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's not her jobbing or being a jobber per se. I mean, it kind of is, but it's worked into the character. So it's at least entertaining. It's not just, you know, if she wasn't on it, seriously, some of those matches with Candy and Indy, like the Candice and Indy, excuse me, like they could have been talent of the week, you know. Local talent of the week is here for a match with Rhea Ripley and Riptide, and we're out of here.
Yeah, and that's the difference. I mean, when Chelsea loses, it's like a wacky sitcom.
It's a skit.
It's a slip on a banana peel every time she loses.
Right, and she's always you know, she's cooking up some genius diabolical plan, and something always gets happened, and she gets foiled again. Right, and it's funny, and it's part of the gimmick and everything. And so it works. But they weren't, you know, they were just sent out there to lose.
Yeah.
With no story, no nothing. They just go out there and lose. They just got to go out there and book to lose.
And hopefully, though. Oh, go ahead, Rob. Finish your thought. Yeah.
And just that makes you expendable.
No, it makes you a loser.
Yeah. Well, we've said that before. It does. I mean.
Yeah. It sucks. You check the tape of the years and years of this wrestling podcast. We are very favorable towards Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. So
yeah.
this one's on WWE. I understand it's getting crowded, but also like, okay, but at least try with everybody. Do 2 weeks.
Give them a chance to do something. And I don't feel like they did that with either one of these girls. Like I said, Tegan's injuries were what they were, and that really derailed what could have been at least a good mid-card woman's career. With Indy, she never even got out of the blocks, and I do hold creative to the fire for some of that. Hopefully those two girls land on their feet.
With what's her name? With oh my gosh, Indy and Tegan, excuse me. So even with Tegan, though, at that last run, you could have done better than Rainbow Hair Girl, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rob.
Because remember, and these are the same creative folks who for over 2 years have been trying over and over again with the Karrion Kross experiment.
Right.
And we've even said,
how's that doing in the numbers that you've been checking? How's the final testament going?
Yeah.
It's probably not moving much of the needle,
but even, you know, and as we've said in our chat, if they just do the shit that he does in his own videos with him, it would probably get a lot better.
Yeah, on his own, Karrion Kross is awesome. They start getting him creative, and I'm like, what are we doing here? But I want to steer away from that. I really wish the best to Indy Hartwell and Tegan Knox. I hope they land somewhere, continue to get paid, and I don't know what their work visa statuses are, but I hope they're both able to stay in the States.
Yeah, and I recommend both of them go to TNA, actually, because they can create a character there.
They get lost in the shuffle in AEW, unfortunately. They get buried under a bunch of talent.
Well, because they're not big enough names for trying to want to do something with immediately, like Mercedes.
Right.
Right. They're just bodies at that point.
Yeah. And they would put Tegan would end up in Ring of Honor in quick order.
Yeah.
Right. So she's an awesome professional wrestler, as we said at the top. Yeah.
So let's get to the third one here, guys. I don't want to linger too long on that because I do want to spend some time here talking about Baron Corbin. And this show collectively wants to give Baron Corbin his flowers. This one came as a shock to me, and maybe it shouldn't because, you know, Corbin was, you know, we had this great run as bum-ass broke Corbin that turned into happy Corbin, which we can talk about that a little bit. Then after that, there was nothing. It was like there was this weird transition. And the timing is dubious of Vince leaving and Triple H taking over, that suddenly there wasn't a whole lot for Baron Corbin to do. So he went down to NXT and by all counts reinvented himself down in NXT. His last run was hellacious. It was incredible. He had some great singles matches.
teamed up with Bron Breakker, helped elevate Bron Breakker. They had a great tag team run. He ended that run as a tag team champion, got redrafted back to the main roster, and went into witness protection. Did a couple of matches here and there, but that was it. And here's a guy, and like I said, these are the flowers. Here's a guy who did everything that they asked him to do and delivered it every single time, even the most ridiculous shit. You know, he went out there and did it. And you know, showed up for work, never said no.
Well, DJ, sorry, that was one of my big points, and I want to really hit that home. It's not even just like, you know, when we say that, you immediately think of the dog food spot. It's like, wow, that guy will let you do anything to him. You know, Roman Reigns is top guy, so he's like, yeah, shit's got to happen to me. But, hey, very cool. But then, like, the punishment, he'll be like, the spots he'll let people do with him. And then, like, all this. And then he'll do comedy. He'll do, like, he'll be the absolute, like, you want to see his head get ripped off asshole. Like, and anything they asked, he was just like, yes, sir, no, sir, how high, sir?
Yeah. And the IWC would have you believe that Baron Corbin was never any good. Fuck off. Baron Corbin was awesome.
Please, no, don't even listen to that.
Baron Corbin was goddamn awesome in that ring.
You know what's awesome? That, and especially now that he got let go, he protected his finisher right until the very fucking end.
He did. He really did.
Who kicked out of it this year? Somebody kicked out of it this year. Well, and that should have been a sign.
Drew did at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Who kicked out at WrestleMania? That's right.
I think that was the only one who ever did.
And yep. That's the only one who ever did. And Drew is, if you asked me to draft a list at a certain point, Drew would be on that list. And that just makes sense. So, like, that dude protected his finisher right up until the end, and maybe he knew something was happening, because obviously, didn't he ask, or did he, what was his status? Did he just get let go, or did he ask to be
They just didn't renew his contract.
Yeah. That's, they just, so maybe, and maybe he knew that was coming, so he's like, alright, I gotta blow this wad. Because, you know, skipping ahead a little bit, I would not be shocked if that guy never wrestled again.
Yeah, I mean, like,
he could do so many different things with his football background, with his court, with his like connections, with his boxing background, with his cooking like stuff that he does. He's actually very good and very entertaining. So I you know, maybe he wrestles here and there, but I wouldn't be shocked if he just did something else for most of the rest of his career.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I mean, look, if. Yeah, I could see him not wrestling again because, yeah, well, I think probably didn't need to.
No.
And
he's out of his car collection.
Yeah, and so he's got other things that he's good at that he could do. He's buddies with McAfee. I mean, if he wants to go into some type of media thing, Pat could hook him up, I'm sure, or at least.
Oh, he could be. He would be an amazing sideline guy.
Yeah. Or. So there, he's got a bunch of other things he could be doing. It wouldn't surprise. Now, of course, if somebody wants to pay him a nice amount of money to come to a spot show somewhere, he'll probably do it, right? I mean, why not, right?
My local guy would pay him.
Yeah. Go for it, man.
Somebody like me, hey. Wanted to pay him to show up and fight somebody at Wrestle Kingdom or something, right? I mean, I'm sure he would take that. But
hey man, and I'm not even gonna crap on you if Tony opens the checkbook and says, hey man, 1 year, I want you to do this, this, and this. All right, whatever, cool, go for it.
Yeah.
I just think that I'm just trying to put over how that guy has a lot of other talents and a lot of other connections, so the world is kind of his oyster at this point.
Yeah, and he's not one of those people who's like, oh, I was always a wrestling fan, I always wanted to be here.
Right.
Yeah, so I could see him moving on entirely. But like y'all said, he did everything, whatever they gave him to do, he went out there and did it. Personally, I think he was the guy that helped Braun get to that point where he was finally ready to come up. Yeah. Those few months they had together, I think they were feuding at first and then they teamed up.
Yeah.
Braun Breakker, like heel turn, like started to make sense there. It didn't feel like an act. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, no, this is real aggression. This is real anger. Like, this guy's finally, like, getting it. He's paired with Baron Corbin, so you have to think, wow, maybe he rubbed off on him a little bit, man.
Yeah, and so I was hoping he would stick around because, like, he's the kind of person you need to have on your roster. You know, for me, if I'm running a wrestling company, you know, I think you need somebody like him. You need to have somebody like him around. But as we've seen, they're locking down all the kind of the top third, the roster. They're locking those folks all into deals and keeping them. And of course we know they got more people coming in on the other end. So some people, yeah, I mean, we've been saying this,
we've had this discussion on this show in the last 4 episodes. I'm sure of it.
And also I tell you, we're probably not done.
No.
Oh, yeah. So now they're not doing the big mass, you know, 20 people at one time releases anymore. At least they haven't for a while, but yeah, maybe it'll just be the kind of 2-3 at a time now, but it's going to happen, folks, because they're not, you know, they can't keep everybody signed, bring everybody up from NXT and keep signing new people. They can't do all of that and keep everybody. Some of these folks are just, you know what? It's going to be okay. Hey, you've been here this long and thanks for playing.
Well, Baron Corbin had almost 12 years. That's a hell of a run. For a wrestler in any company, 12 years is a hell of a run. My hat's off to him. I think, you know, broke bum ass down on his luck, Baron Corbin was one of the best things on TV at that point in time. And he hit it out of the park. And I was talking with you guys about this the other day. I said, when they did the Happy Corbin thing, as an idea, Happy Corbin stunk out loud. And he still found a way to knock it out of the park. Personally, what I envisioned with the broke Corbin thing was he eventually went on this spiritual journey. Now I got really deep into it with this one. He goes on the spiritual journey, kind of like My Name is Earl. If you ever watched that show, he's like, holy shit, I was a dick to all these people. And now look at me. I'm starving and I haven't had a haircut in, you know, a month and I haven't changed my shirt in 3 weeks. So, you know, maybe I need to change my ways. And to me, he was going to go on this redemption arc, where he finally rights all his wrongs, makes amends with people, so, you know, does what he's supposed to do there, and then goes on this tremendous winning streak in a babyface run that I think he was due. I don't think we ever really got to see a good babyface Baron Corbin run, and I wanted to see that because a lot of people had a problem with his heel work because he wasn't the quote-unquote cool heel. Baron Corbin didn't go out there to sell T-shirts. Baron Corbin didn't go out there to get people to cheer for him, even though they weren't supposed to. Baron Corbin went out there to piss you off. He went out there to make you mad. He went out there to make you want to see him get punched in the face, which is what a good old school classic heel is supposed to do. Baron Corbin always understood the assignment. And people gave him so much crap for that because you just didn't get it. So for me, I wanted to see him go on a babyface run because I wanted to see if he was as good a babyface as he was a heel.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that would have been cool to see him try to do some sort of heroic character. But when you laid your plan out, I was like, yeah, he should do that. He should make amends with everybody. He should, you know, and then because of his good deeds and because of, you know, all the great things he's done to turn himself around, that's when he strikes it rich. And that's when he immediately becomes an asshole again. And then we get into Happy Corbin.
Yeah, right. I just think the striking it rich happened a little too quick for me.
Sure. That makes sense. But dude, talk about a guy who just never said, and awesome wrestler. I'm sorry. Like, so good. I particularly like his style. It speaks to me, you know, hard hitting, you know, he's good striker, you know, obviously, with his little ring post spot that he does, getting in and out of, or out and into the ring, like
the boss,
way more agile than you would think a guy of his size could be. So Yeah, man. He was.
And the End of Days is a classic finisher.
Dude, that thing is awesome.
The End of Days is badass. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and it was new and unique, and nobody had done it. But it was actually a new move.
It was.
He's one. Deep Six? So he's one who like his signature is just as believable as his finisher, and the Deep Six is also awesome.
Well, and the Deep Six works because he's so tall.
Yeah. Right. He can do it to a guy, lots of different guys, because not many guys are bigger, at least taller than him.
Right. So I'll let you guys get your last words in here. I just wanted to tell Baron Corbin, if he ever listens to this episode, thank you for 12 good years of WWE programming. Thank you for being awesome. We have always supported you on this show, and we continue to support whatever you do moving forward. I think this stinks. I would like to have seen him end his career there, as I'm sure he probably would have. Unfortunately, that's not what we got. So thank you and good luck in whatever you're going to do moving forward. Rob, you got any last thoughts here?
No, I think you covered it, man. But thank you, Baron. Thank you so much, man, for everything.
What was his persona called when it wasn't, was he the Lone Wolf?
He was the Lone Wolf.
Yeah.
Well, he was the Lone Wolf in NXT, but didn't he have a different moniker once he was on the main roster?
He started off as the Lone Wolf, and then he won King of the Ring, so he was doing a Game of Thrones-esque king-type character.
Let's not forget that. His whole
That was a great run, too.
That was so much fun. And, hey, legit, King of the Ring, Baron Corbin. Like, that's awesome.
King of the Ring, and he was U.S. Champion. Was it U.S. or Intercontinental?
Yeah, he was U.S. Champion.
U.S., that's what I thought. U.S. Champion and an NXT Tag Team Champion. Hell of a run, man. Hell of a run. Thank you.
And I will say, what I was going to say about that run is the when he switched to the I Bring the Darkness theme song with that entrance, that's one of my favorite entrances in wrestling, period. That song rips. He made it work. It's so ridiculous. It's so corny, but the dude made it work every single time. So hats off, man.
All right, and on that note, we are going to swerve a little bit out of the wrestling talk here for a little bit and get into some nerd stuff. We're going to swerve into the bandwagon nerds territory here a little bit. This was, again, thank you, Nicole, on our Discord chat, and you know she's been a guest host on here a couple times for this particular topic. We were just looking for something fun, something light, something different. Jason posed the question to our group. Nicole came up with, what are our top five animated DC Universe movies? And before we get going, guys, do you want to just like do around the room 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, or do you want to go one at a time and give our top fives?
Go
around the room?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll start off with five. And Jason, I'll start with you. What's your number five?
Teen Titans, The Judas Contract.
Okay.
Because it's one of my favorite stories, and I liked how they modernized it, because the Judas Contract is when Deathstroke tries to kill all the Teen Titans, and he has Tara on the inside, and she's, you know, a traitor to the Titans, but they don't find that out until the end. But they also modernized it, because I think the original was, what, 80s? 89?
Yeah, something like
Something like that.
They also did a version of that in the Teen Titans TV show.
Yes. So, that was one of the final, that was basically one of the seasons was the Judas Contract. Basically.
Yes, that was like the finale.
But they modernized it. So the original was in 89, but in this retelling and animated version, they brought in like Damian Wayne is Robin. And they brought in those, like, some more modern characters. So that's my number five, because, you know, I love Nightwing and I love Deathstroke and I love that story. So.
All right. Rob, you're number five.
Yeah, number five, Sub-Zero. It's a Batman movie with Mr. Freeze. And I guess the reason I really like it because they finally, like, they had a happy ending for Mr. Freeze at the end. And because, you know, Mr. Freeze isn't like, he's a tragic figure more than like a, you know, just super evil guy.
Right.
And it's kind of hard to write a bunch, you know, to do ongoing stuff with him because his, basically he's all wrapped up in one thing trying to, you know, save his wife. And so it's kind of limited what you can do with him as far as storytelling. So, but they did all, you know, but they nailed every part of it in this thing. And then at the end, he did get, you know, cause like at the end of it, you know, they found some type of way to treat his wife, I think. And he's, you know, but he's on the run, but he kind of at the end, he's kind of like, he peeps through the window and he kind of smiles or whatever. And that's kind of the end of it. And, but yeah, cause like I said, he's a tragic figure. And to me, it was just nice to see that story handled the way it was.
All right. Yeah, that's a good, I haven't seen that one in a long time. My gosh, that's a good call there. I didn't even think about that one when I was doing my list.
Oh, DJ, by the way, that made me think because Sub-Zero was a very, very, very high honorable mention, basically probably number six for me.
Number six.
But so if one of us says one of the ones that we have on our list, should we all jump in and be like, hey,
absolutely. This is where,
okay. Cause we don't need to, cause then we can all talk about what is clearly one of our favorite movies.
Sure. Absolutely. Number five for me was Gotham by Gaslight. This is a more modern, modern movie, not a modern, it's set way back in like the 1800s, a Victorian era piece. And it combines two things that I absolutely love, Batman and steampunk. And it's, Jason, have you seen Gotham by Gaslight?
I have.
Oh, God. I love it.
Not one of my favorite stories or anything, but artistically, I'd put it in my top, like, whatever.
I love the artistic styling. I love the story, because, correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a little bit, but I've seen it. It's centered around Jack the Ripper, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
It's centered around Jack the Ripper, and the reveal, the twist at the end, got me. Like, it just gutted me. I was like, holy crap. I remember calling my friend or texting my friend because he and I both picked it up the same day and we both watched it the same night separately. And he's just like, holy shit, I didn't see that coming. So we are going to wrap back around and I'm going to go with my number four, Batman, Superman, Public Enemies. Oh, I really liked Public Enemy for a bunch of different reasons. I love the team up with the two. I like the little interaction at one point where Superman picks up Batman and they're flying and Batman's like, we never speak of this. Basically the interactions with, Kevin Conroy. And I always forget the name of the guy who voices Superman, Tim Daly. Yeah.
Tim Daly.
It was Tim Daly. That's right. The interaction between those two is golden. And, you know, it picks up from, you know, the Bruce Tim, animations and everything. And just it carries over that gravitas. And it was a turning point in the animation for me because the way they were drawn was so different than the Justice League. And the Justice League stuff was good for TV, but this was just a more visceral artistic style. So I really enjoyed Public Enemies.
So DJ, just a quick interjection. I have literally the next one in that series on my list, but also they did a very, very, very good job of capturing the actual art style of the comic book itself, because it's based on a Superman Batman comic book.
Yes.
And so that art direction change that you're talking about, it's because they copied the guy. Forgive me, I'll look it up while one of you is talking and we'll put him over. But they copied his style almost exactly and made it animated. Hell of a job.
Incredible. Rob, so, what was your number four?
Four is, where's that? Oh, Batman Bad Blood.
Refresh my memory, because I think I've seen this one, but I don't remember.
It's based off of some of the New 52 stuff. Basically, he goes missing, and then so Dick Grayson's been filling in for him, and then they introduce Batwoman, and Damian's part of it, and they also bring in Batwing, Luke Fox, Lucius Fox's son, and they set out to basically find Bruce Wayne because he'd been taken by, I think, Talia al Ghul. And so it all ends up like in this big fight thing going on and everything. And
I'm going to write that down. I have not seen that one yet.
It's a tremendous Bat Kids movie.
Yeah, because it's,
okay.
You know,
well, without the best Bat Kid, but I digress.
But and so it's just for me, you know, because one of my biggest pet peeves with all the live action Batman movies is that they insist on having Bruce Wayne be by himself, or they insist on the Bruce Wayne working alone all the time, and they never bring in any other characters. So I really enjoyed this because they finally brought in a bunch of, you know, they brought in a bunch of the other characters.
There you go. All right. Jason, you're number four.
Number four was Justice League, the Flashpoint Paradox. And if you've seen The Flash, you've basically seen it. The Flash, well, you don't know this at the beginning of the movie, just The Flash wakes up and he's in this god-awful weird world where he doesn't have powers and, you know, all the his friends are dead and, you know, Thomas Wayne is Batman and all that stuff. So, and he goes through, you know, trying to figure out why the future is different or why the present is different and all this stuff. And he finds, he doesn't find Bruce because Bruce is dead, but he finds like Clark, you know, be hidden under like a government research lab and all this stuff. But it's just a very, very fun, movie and the emotional core of, I mean, I'm certain sure everybody's seen Flash by now or seen, you know, the adaptation of it on the Flash show, but the whole timeline happens because Barry the Flash gets it in his head one day that he's going to go back in time and stop his mother from being murdered. And, you know, as we learned in, what's that time travel movie? Nah, anyway. But anyway, he creates a Flashpoint paradox and, you know, it messes up time. So he has to fix time and all that stuff. But anyway, the movie itself, the animation is absolutely incredible. Some of the best acting in any of the movies I've ever seen. And then they nail the emotional gravitas parts from the comic. They nail in the adaptation, obviously in the movie. So
this was my number one. This movie was my number one. I absolutely love this one for all the reasons that Jason's saying. The emotional gravitas. I love the interaction between Reverse Flash and Flash at the end, where basically he's like, you know, you went back to save your mommy and look at the mess you made, and they call me the villain. You know, just some of the dialogue in this. Again, goosebumps right now just thinking about some of the dialogue in this film. Absolutely incredible, and I loved the fact that this carried over into one of the Suicide Squad films. I think it was Hell to Pay was the Suicide Squad film that it carried over into, because if you guys saw that one, the Suicide Squad is basically there's this thing going and they're trying to chase this thing down and you don't know what it is. They imply that it's a ghost. And if you remember what happened to Reverse Flash at the end of Flashpoint, when they have you guys seen it? Because I don't want to spoil anything.
Well, no, I haven't. No.
Oh, God. You saw it, Jason?
Did you see The Flash?
The movie, the live action?
Rob.
Yeah, I saw that, but I didn't see the Suicide Squad thing.
Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay, you got to watch it. It's good.
Okay.
It's really good. Like I said, this one was my number one, so, you know, that we're there with that. But, yeah, this is probably my favorite. There were a couple that I had such a hard time with this list because DC, for all the complaints that we could make about their live action department, their animation department knocks it out of the park 99% of the time.
They've been hitting it out of the park for like, what,
25 years. So ever since Batman the Animated Series, they have not missed. They've had a couple of movies that I didn't care for quite as much as others.
Like, at worst, fine.
Right.
Like, at everything worst, else, and they have like 40 entries.
Right. And I like how if you really pay attention, aside from the little one-offs and the side pieces like Gotham by Gaslight, Batman Samurai, Batman Ninja, what was it?
Yeah.
Batman Ninja, those little side pieces, the rest of the stories all flow in one long story arc, and Flashpoint actually resets the whole timeline,
And we get the movies that spin off from that at the end of Justice League Dark Apocalypse War.
Well, and, you know, Flash the movie theoretically did that for the DC, universe. And Flashpoint the comic did that for the DC comics when that launched the New 52.
It launched the New 52, it did.
Every single title, including the ones that have been running for 70 years, like Superman and Batman, started
with DC does about every decade or so.
Yeah, like, but not certain ones don't get touched. Like, you know, like Superman was in like the 800s or something. Action Comics was in like the almost the over the thousands.
Yeah.
Like, and then for them to reset every single title in the same week, I still have them all, by the way, bagged and boarded. I have some of them. That's one of the jewels of my collection. I have all the number ones from the first run of that, like that month of DC New 52. If there was number ones in the year later in the whatever, I probably don't have them, but regardless.
I think the only ones I collected with regularity was Batwoman, because Batwoman had a really, really good, opened with a really good, like kind of ghoulish murder mystery, and it just roped me in.
Nice.
So, all right, Jason, you're number three.
My number three? Didn't I just do my – I just did Flashpoint Paradox.
Oh, was that your number three? Okay, then, Rob, have you done your number three?
No, I have not.
Rob, it's your number three. Go ahead.
Okay, our number three is Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
Okay. Now we're having a discussion.
I went to the movie theaters, by the way. I saw it in the theaters.
Yep, me too. That's my number one. I saw it in the theaters.
Yeah, and because just because it actually had like detective elements to it when he's trying to figure out because the Phantasm is picking these people off, and he figures out who the Phantasm is, and then he sees who the last person he figures out who the last person on the list is, and it's like, oh shit, and then everything all the way everything all comes together. And then the resolution of it all, I just thought was really well done. And to me, it's always good when they can nail the detective part of the Batman character. I always think that's really good, and they did it there.
So this is my number one, because I saw it in theaters, and I was younger than Rob when I saw it in theaters. So it obviously is very left an impression on me, but being that kid and seeing a Batman cartoon in theaters, you know, that I've been watching on television, is pretty cool. Kind of like the reverse, you know, how I felt about Luke Skywalker on my TV at 9 a.m. on Saturday. But anyway, it beautifully animated, even still, it holds up. Thankfully, the animation, what little you could pick apart about the animation almost fits the noir elements of it. So it's one that's going to stand the test of time. And like Rob, the resolution at the end and the ambiguity of the end and the very, very, very last part. Well, I'll just, for anyone who hasn't seen it, please watch it. Again, it's my number one, animated movie. It's so good. I won't spoil it for anyone, but Bruce thinks he finds something at the end, the very, very, very end of the movie. And Rob, obviously, you and DJ, you know what I'm talking about. And the way, when he finds that thing, when he actually discovers what it is, it just brings everything together of the whole ending, and I'll put it this way. It's a good film, and I'd put it in my like top half of movies, period. So there you go.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add to the discussion there. Mask of the Phantasm was my number two. And that's only by the slimmest of margins is it number two, because it's that good, and it's one that I go back and revisit. I didn't see it in the theater like you guys did. In 1993, my head was somewhere else. And it was not in watching animated Batman movies at the theater. We'll leave that discussion out the door. But in going back and finally sitting down and watching it, I was like, you dumbass, you should have seen this in the theater. It was just that good. And it was a great, to me, kind of felt like an exclamation point to what was an incredible animated series. And it just felt like it just tied that whole thing up in a nice bow.
All right, so DJ, we're on your number three?
My number three, Under the Red Hood.
That's my number two.
That's your number two, Under the Red Hood.
That's my number two.
Your number two, okay, so we can have another discussion here. I love everything about this film because it really forces you to question Batman. I have always had, like, people get on the internet and they talk about all the live action movies and, you know, Zack Snyder's interpretation of Batman and Christopher Nolan's interpretation of Batman. And the overlying argument of all of it is that Batman doesn't kill. And that argument has always driven me insane because while I get it and in Under the Red Hood, he tries to explain it to me, Batman and his rogues gallery, particularly the Joker, has every reason to kill. Okay. He's every reason. And they even explore that when Jason Todd, right?
Yes. The greatest Robin of all time.
Yes, Jason Todd, basically. Of all time. He's like, how many graveyards has this guy filled? He's like, just this. I'm not telling you to take out everybody. I'm telling you just this one. Why can't you do it with him for me? And it's everything that I wanted someone to say to Batman. How can you let the Joker continue to kill and kill and kill and kill and you do nothing? I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it's the best, man. Obviously, I'm partial because Red Hood, Jason Todd, is one of my favorite characters in comic books. And the Under the Red Hood story was, you know, how they brought him back in modern comics. So, like, it's special to me. But also, like, dude, again, we talk about the emotional gravitas. The part where he's, underrated part, Bruce Greenwood.
Yes.
Didn't do Batman very often. My God, he was a good Batman. Wasn't a great Bruce. But he was a tremendous Batman. So I want to give him his flowers. I want to give Neil Patrick Harris his flowers. Because Neil Patrick Harris was Nightwing in that movie, and he did he was exactly the levity and the boy wonderness that movie needed. And Neil Patrick Harris brought that all the way through. Jensen Ackles, as Jason Todd Red Hood, as DJ says, the way he delivers that last monologue of, you know, I'm not talking about Scarecrow or Dent or, you know, the graveyards this guy's filled, the friends he's crippled, talking about Batgirl, Barbara Gordon, obviously, you know, nice little Easter egg in there. So, and he says, and I'm not asking you to do it for Dent or Scarecrow or whoever, him, just him, because he took me away from you. And I just was like,
Oh, dude, that'll bring the waterworks.
Yeah.
Whoa. And again, he's my favorite character, and he's saying, why'd you let me die? And why'd you not take care of business? So it's like extra. But, yeah, man. And again, that's why Jason Todd's one of my favorite characters. So there you go.
Rob, you got anything more here?
No, just man, everything he said, man, just it hit all the emotional centers. And again, that dialogue between the two of them, you know, it's just riveting, man. And again, it does make you question, you know, they question it in a good way, not the usual stupid dialogue that you see from people. They had him question in just a real emotional kind of way. And because normally when I see people going in, I'm just like, yeah, whatever. You know.
And, Jason Todd makes you think, man.
Yeah. And, you know, and because again, it's like, Like, you couldn't do this. And not even, I think you didn't say, it wasn't even why didn't you save me? It's why didn't you get him to me? Right?
No, because he's actually, that's part of the heartbreaking things. He said, he looks at him and he says, Bruce, I forgive you for not saving me. But, and then he smashes the wall. But why is he still alive?
Yeah. And to be fair, again, as in the Batman, character way, he's like, look, because once you do it, it becomes easier. He's like, the hard part is not doing it. And I get that. But at the same time, I just loved how this made you morally question whether or not Batman's really doing the right thing here.
We're having the discussion out of order because Batman says that. He's like, you've never understood. Like, you know, once you start, you know, it'd be so easy to just keep going. And he's like, and then he says something like, why do they always say that? It's like, why? He's like, why? Like, why do the spandex, why do the Boy Scouts and spandex always say that? Once I start down the dark path, and that's when he goes into, you know, I'm not talking about doing a list. I'm just talking about icing this dude, man. That's it.
Yeah.
And it's a broader discussion. It's on everybody. It's on the state. It's on the city. It's on the cops. It's on Batman. Somebody's just got to take this guy out.
Yeah. Incredible film. So I know we've had some overlap. I've gone through. Was your number two, correct?
Yeah,
that
was your number two. That was Jason's number two. I think we cleared out Jason's number one, didn't we?
Yeah, and so I think I've only not done my number three.
Okay, what's your number?
Skipped over that, or whatever it was. But in any case, the only one I don't think we've discussed that I wanted to talk about was the direct sequel to Batman Superman Public Enemies. It's Batman Superman Apocalypse. It's when...
That's honorable mention on my list.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll go over my honorable mention in a minute, but go ahead, Jason.
And again, it's partial because it's one of my favorite comics, because... Not only is the story amazing of Supergirl coming to Earth and, like, learning how to be on Earth when she was the one that was supposed to be, you know, Kal-El's big sister, and now he's the, you know, most famous man on the planet. So, and she's trying to deal with that, and she's also a teenager, and, oh, she also has superpowers, and, oh, she also being captured by Darkseid, and her, like, two pseudo-parents for the 3 weeks that she's been around have been Batman and Superman. So, yeah, they capture all of that confusion and very, very well. And another reason, same reason I love Public Enemies is the reason I love this. One of the reasons it's my favorite comic, one of my favorite comics is because it's the interior, not just the covers. This guy was mostly a covers guy, but he sometimes did interiors and it's beautiful stuff. Michael Turner, who sadly passed away a few years ago.
Michael Turner, my God.
He is my favorite comic book artist of all time. I do not care that he has same face. Every dude has the same face, and every dude has the same three faces, and every girl has the same three faces.
The same thing about Jim Lee. They all have a style.
Jim Lee and, you know, and certain other artists, certain guys just have same face. And
all of them have their signatures.
And some guys make it work and some guys don't. And for my opinion, Michael Turner makes it work. So whatever. I just love the sharp angles and the sharp lines and the way he draws Batman and the way he draws Superman. He accentuates all the cool things. Like, his Batman has a very long cowl of a cape, you know, that's brushing the floor, and, you know, like the Dracula thing when he's standing still and he has very pointy ears. And then when he's, like, fighting, you know, and the cape's open, he's basically a buff ninja. So perfect, out of the park, and Superman's a brick shithouse. Correct. Awesome. And he draws babes. All, you know, he's just one of those guys who draws all his women just as absolute knockouts. Like a lot of them do again. Even if with his same face, like, issues, the way he captures people's expressions, and it was translated to the animation, Kara when she looks, you know, or Supergirl when she looks like skeptical and she's like cocking her mouth to the side. Just little things like that. They nailed it again in both the comic and the animated translation. So hats off. And that was one of, if not the last, I don't think it was the last, but it was one of the last ones that Tim Daly and Kevin Conroy did together. And again, their back and forth, just like in Public Enemies, is incredible. So Rob?
Okay. So now we're, I really enjoyed it. And again, I love it when they bring a bunch of different people in, and Supergirl is, if you read the comics, she's one of the kind of underrated characters. There are a lot of stories with her.
Yeah.
And the dynamic between her and Clark, you know, is always good when they play it up right. And I would recommend if, just one where she became a Red Lantern for a while, and that was just outstanding. It was called Red Daughter, actually. That was on my honorable mentions list. So.
Okay.
Very good choice.
Yeah, it was an excellent choice, Jason, and a good sequel follow up there. So, has anybody else got anything on their list? Rob, did you have one more, or did we clear your list out?
Number one.
You're one number one. Go for it.
Justice League Doom.
That was a good one.
That's an adaptation of the Tower of Babel Justice League story, where in the comic it was Ra's al Ghul who got hold of all of Batman's countermeasures for the Justice League. In the animated movie, it was Vandal Savage. And so he has to, you know, Batman has to basically help all the members recover, and they have to find Vandal Savage, take out him and all his people he's helping. But what really makes it is the part at the end where the Justice League is confronting Batman. Was like, dude, how could you do this? And he's just basically like, fuck all of y'all. Of course I can do this, and I would do it again.
Okay. Yep.
And, you know, and then one of them asks, like, well, what's your plan if you go rogue? And he's like, well, my plan is for you people to stop me.
Yeah, the way he just delivers it, like, what are you all, like, obviously he doesn't say it like this because he's Batman, but he's like, what are y'all talking about? Like, you all are gods. Like, of course I'm going to do this. And also, yeah, if I go crazy, I expect one of you super titans to come squish my head. Like, what are we talking about here? The way he's so matter of fact about it is just awesome. Yeah, and just
no remorse, no shame, no guilt, no nothing.
You talk about understanding the assignment, man. Kevin Conroy. Again, and we did an episode after he passed away a couple years ago, and you know, we said our piece about him, but my God, what a legendary, just every single time, from movies to TV shows to video games. It's so many different forms of media. He did Batman, and he was Batman for a generation of us. And that movie again, the deadpan, I expect you guys to do it. You know, that's Batman, because that's something Batman would actually say in that tone, in that cadence to them.
Yeah. And then of course, then when it's all over, Superman pulls him aside and hands him some kryptonite. He's like, here, man, just in case.
Yeah. Yeah, great call. Rob. Really good call.
Superman, of course, understands, right, that, you know, as, you know, out of bounds as that may seem, like, well, yeah, you know, it might happen.
Well, it speaks to the characters, because that's one of Clark's biggest fears, is losing control.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also the trust between the two of them, that he gives it to him. He's like, I trust you. If it ever needs to be used, I trust you to do it.
Yeah. Wow. So guys, that was a great talk. My honorable mention was The Killing Joke. I just love that one. And it was so hard not to put that one on the list, but I didn't want to boot off anything else that I had on here. I thought the adaptation, the artwork, everything was so spot on. I love that the animation, much like the book, wasn't afraid to go there in some very uncomfortable situations, because those uncomfortable situations are what makes the story. And it's my honorable mention, was A Killing Joke.
Sure.
All right. So, guys, gentlemen, great talk. Had a lot of fun with that one. Again, Nicole, thank you for that topic. We're going to go to commercial break, and when we do, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about fictional characters and or actors slash actresses that we thought might have made good pro wrestlers. We're going to do that on the backside of the break, but before we go to break, I want to invite you to go over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. From there, you can look at, browse, peruse, if you will, all the Chair Shot Radio Network podcast t-shirts that are available, including this one, the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. We've got our own t-shirt there. You can go check that out. The holidays are coming. You want to get yourself, you want to get your family, your friends a gift. Everybody needs a t-shirt. Everybody likes clothes. As Jason said a couple weeks ago, you can wear us on your bodies. How cool is that? Go pick one up. Pick one up. The starving artist on this show will thank you. Your body will thank you if you pick one up in soft style. That is prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. We're going to commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And we are back. We're going to get into something a little bit original here. And again, this was Rob's topic. Again, like I said before the break, fictional characters and or actors slash actresses that we think might have made good pro wrestlers. And this is kind of neat because, you know, when I really got to think about it, when I did my, and I only did three, I'll tell you guys it right off the rip. When I did my three, I tried to avoid the obvious choices like an Arnold Schwarzenegger or a Dolph Lundgren or a Sylvester Stallone. I tried to pick people that were a little bit more obscure, but that I thought the characters and or the actors slash actresses embodied what I think might make a good pro wrestler. I don't know what kind of criteria you guys went on. You can explain that as you go along. Rob, we'll start with you. What kind of criteria did you look at? And then give us your first one.
Okay, so I thought of, like, who is a real-life person who I think would just be a great performer in that field? Or what character do I think would make a great wrestling character? So that's what I came up with. That's what my criteria was.
Okay. So go ahead and give us your first one.
My first one is Indiana Jones.
That's incredible.
He could be the sympathetic babyface that gets the shit kicked out of him, because he does quite often, and finds a way to pull it out at the end when the heel does something stupid, or by outsmarting the heel. And of course, he has friends that could come help him along the way also. And then you could even have a backstage thing with him and his dad scolding him or chastising him about something and Solid laughing at him, whatever. I mean, there's a lot you could do there with that, I think.
Rob, I'm only laughing because my first guy is Han Solo.
Oh,
that's incredible. That's incredible.
Because it's like... all the same reasons, pretty much. Obviously, the guy can talk. He'd be that, like, hey, let's talk about this. Let's maybe not, like, you know, and he'd be that, you know, going between the ropes and, like, hold on. And then when things actually start breaking down, he's one of the best chain wrestlers on the roster. Like, I could totally just see that for, you know, again, Han and Indiana Jones, two sides of the same coin.
All right. So, Jason, since you gave us one of yours, what were your criteria with this particular list? Or did you have one, or did you just...
I didn't really have criteria. I just was like, fictional characters, and then you were like, actors. And then I was like, well, you know, and then I got to thinking of just people like, what if they just chose pro wrestling as their career instead of whatever? So mine are all over the map. I'll warn everybody. I also came up with three, and Rob took one of mine, so Han Solo.
Okay. For my criteria, I tried to think larger than life, not only in stature, but in personality. I did pick two actors an actor and actress, and then one fictional character. I'll give you the fictional character first and I talked to you guys about this already, so you know where I'm going. From Big Trouble in Little China, Jack Burton. Kurt Russell's turn as Jack Burton was incredible. He was larger than life. He was ridiculous in all the right ways. He was a ridiculous hero. A bit of an underdog because he does get his ass kicked a few times in here because he's such a great buffoon. But, he also had, you know, he had the look for starters. Kurt Russell was a great looking young man. He had just the killer, he had the one-liners. He had a great mullet. He had the muscles. Like, for me, when I think of a well-rounded pro wrestler, it's Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China. So let's go backwards here and come back to Jason. You got another one?
I do. Again, I was all over the map, but I do, you know, he is an actor. He has been in several movies. He starred in one with his fake family. So imagine if instead of basketball out of high school, LeBron James decided he wanted to go to the WWF. I think he would have been a tremendous professional wrestler. I also think he's like a genetically gifted freak who, if, you know, if he wanted to be a soccer player and he started when he was 10 or whatever he did when he was basketball, he would have been one of the best goalies in the world. If he wanted to stick with football, he would have been one of the best tight ends in the world. He chose basketball, so he's one of the best basketball players in the world. I think his charisma, his force of personality, obviously his, you know, athletic skill set, because kids, if you're listening to this now and you're younger than us and you for some reason don't remember the Miami Heat or don't remember them as fondly, Rob will back me up here. That man was a freak of nature. Like, yes. He could do things that would just make your mind bend. Rob?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. But anyway, yeah, I think he would have been, again, with his charisma, his force of personality, he would have been a tremendous professional wrestler. I just believe that.
Okay. Rob, who you got?
Number two is an actual person, and he is maybe the favorite actor in our little chat, and that is our man, Crazy Tom Cruise.
That's
incredible.
Honorable mention, Tom Cruise. Again, imagine he wanted to be a pro wrestler from jump.
Tom, he would do death matches. He would do all the high spots.
Yep.
He would cut those really super intense Tom Cruise yelling into the microphone promos.
Oh, I would pay good money to see a Tom Cruise wrestling promo.
And he would do the Tom Cruise run down the aisle to save somebody when they were getting beat down.
Oh. This is getting better by the minute.
I need it.
I mean, yeah.
Ironically enough, I was watching Edge of Tomorrow. Let me make sure I say it properly so Jason doesn't cut my throat.
Hey, I was just trying to get it right. Because you just said, hey, I'm watching Edge of Darkness. I was like, really? No, you're not.
Cruise. He's like, no, you mean Edge of Tomorrow? I'm like, yeah, that one.
I'm like, Edge of Darkness is like a Mel Gibson conspiracy theory.
It's a fine
movie.
Film, but it's not Tom Cruise.
But it's also, I'm like, just based on the mood of when we were talking about this, I'm like, you're not watching that movie. You're not watching a conspiracy theory movie right now.
Yeah.
So.
A Tom Cruise wrestling run would be incredible, Rob. That's a good call.
Yes. Hey, and you know what? You know what? If he wanted to do it tomorrow, he could.
Oh, he would. If he had any interest at all, he would.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, physically, he could still, like, I don't know about bumping, but, like, they could work something and it wouldn't be a farce for sure with Tom Cruise.
Yeah. And he would completely immerse himself in it because that's just the type of professional he is.
Yeah.
Well, the type of psychotic person he is.
Yeah, that's why we call him Crazy Tom.
That's moniker is not for nothing.
But he'd also be like shorter than Johnny Gargano, which is terrible to think about. Yeah.
That would be a problem. But,
yeah. You'd have to keep him in NXT. Could you imagine Trick Williams standing over top of Tom Cruise? Just imagine that visual for a minute.
Yeah.
That's incredible. All right. My next up again is another a real person, an actor who sadly is no longer with us, Michael Clark Duncan. When you think of this guy, and this helps because he was a wrestling fan. Like, he was close. He was tight with The Rock. And one of my favorite stories that he told, and I forget what interview I was reading it from, when George W. Bush, it was either his first or his second
presidential win, he got an invite to the White House. Michael Clark Duncan did. He said, that's fine. He's like, I just can't come on Monday nights because Raw is on. So I just thought that was incredible that he declined a Monday night invitation to the White House because he didn't want to miss an episode of Raw. But yeah, just you think about that guy, his size, he really in interviews, he comes off like a big teddy bear. And he really was, if you really paid attention to the guy's career and his life and everything, he really was a big teddy bear. But when you just think of, again, force of presence, stature, overall look, the voice, he had everything that would have made an incredible professional wrestler.
Just to give him another shout out here. You know, when they cast him as the Kingpin, nobody raised a fuss about the race swapping thing because he was literally everybody said, well, look, he's the guy that can do it.
Listen, if you're not going to do some sort of fat suit, if you're not going to – not fat suit, but muscle suit, and you're not going to do some sort of gimmick and you just need to cast a real dude, yeah, man.
And he knocked it out of the park. Like, he was really – it wasn't just his size. He was really good.
The intensity, and people the kind of, if our listeners have seen Daredevil and seen, you know, how, forgive me, I forget his name at the moment, plays Kingpin, you know, that kind of, you know, almost bipolar, but not quite, you know, fits of rage, et cetera. Michael Clark Duncan also played that incredibly well. And that final fight scene is actually a ton of fun.
It is. It really is. When he finally reveals that he's who he is, and he's just looking at him like, really? The blind lawyer?
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah.
Incredible line delivery.
All right. So, Rob, you got anybody else? I've got one more for the record.
I got, and while I'm going to go last because it's a segue into our last thing that we're going
to
do.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. We'll go to Jason next. They'll come to me, and then we'll go to Rob.
Well, I have a quick honorable mention that kind of just popped into my head with the whole, what if they did that their whole career, or, you know, Stephen Amell, I think, could have been an Adam Cole type superstar. If he had done wrestling from jump or like right after Arrow, he was like, I'm going to be a full-time wrestler. I think that dude could have made the swap. I don't think he would have invented any WrestleManias or anything like that. But he could have definitely made the jump, and I think it would have been a ton of fun. But
I think he would have been every bit as good as Logan Paul has ended up being.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. I don't know if he would have been quite as entertaining on the stick, but still, yeah. As far as a celebrity in-ring, yeah, probably if he did it full-time.
Bell to bell, I agree with you.
Now, you just gave me an honorable mention. I just thought of while you were talking.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, go ahead and do your honorable mention, then I'll do mine, and we'll come back to you for your final.
Will Smith. Will Smith, because if you saw him in Ali, he nailed all the physical parts of the boxing, and then they even, I mean, I'm saw an interview with Ali's old trainer, it was Angelo Dundee, I think it was, even said that, look, if I'd gotten a hold of him when he was 16 years old, you know, we could have had something there. I mean, he nailed the boxing stuff that well.
Yeah, it's still a travesty that he didn't win an Academy Award for that.
Yeah, and so I think, look, Will's a big dude. I mean, he's a pretty athletic dude. He could handle the physical part. We know he could talk and all of that. I think he'd been really good at it.
Yeah, that's a good call, Rob. That's really good. So my third and final, and again, I after doing my animated movie list and then doing this, I just kind of was listed out. This one I'm going to pull out of left field, and you guys will probably look at me and groan. Brigitte Nielsen. And I say Brigitte Nielsen because of her stature and her look. If you think of Brigitte, I'm talking Brigitte Nielsen from Red Sonja. You go look at her stature, her build, the way she looked, everything about her just screams. That whole package screams professional wrestler.
Or Beverly Hills Cop also.
Beverly Hills Cop,
The role she played in that also. Not crazy at all.
Okay, I wrote that one down. I'm like, okay, Jason may or may not know who she is. Rob is going to look at me and roll his eyes. I was thinking when I wrote her name down.
Once he said Red Sonja, I was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, and yes, from what I've seen, yes, that makes sense. So I think I just have my last one, unless you guys have any more.
Well, Rob's got his last one. Will you go? And then Rob can go, because, like I said, Rob's last one segues into the watch-along.
Correct. Okay, so my last one is kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum of some of my folks, but Chris Farley. If that dude wanted to be a pro wrestler and he got a good break, and again, you know, at least got the basics, learned how to bump, learned how to do a decent, you know, big guy match, that dude would have been electric, you know. And I mean, given his hobbies and the time period, who knows how long we would have lasted. But hey,
he would fit right in during the 80s.
Yeah, I was gonna say he would have fit right in. So
and that's not as ridiculous of a call as one would think, because he was really good at physical comedy.
Gonna say, he was never afraid to get physical, never afraid, but he did it well. It wasn't just that guy fall down. Like, he knew how to fall without breaking his hip. And like,
right. So that's not a far-fetched call at all, Jason. I like that.
Does anybody remember Beverly Hills Ninja?
More or less. I remember excerpt a bit. I remember enough of it to say, yes, I'm sorry I saw it.
Rob, just put it this way. Chris Farley played a ninja. There you go. So that, just wherever your imagination takes you on that, played a ninja in Beverly Hills. There you go.
Okay. All right, Rob, give us your last one, buddy.
My last one, which is a segue into our next thing, and that is Mr. Shownuff, the Shogun of Harlem.
From Barry Gordy's Last Dragon.
Yes, and he's like a black karate man version of Tribal Chief Roman Reigns, basically. From the talking and the attitude and everything. This is an awesome movie character. And he would be a perfect, like, final boss type of wrestling heel. And he had goons and everything, and it was just outstanding work.
Again, the movie that we're referencing, I watched so many times as a kid. It's literally probably in my top five most watched all-time movies. It's Barry Gordy's Last Dragon. We used to walk around just looking at each other that, show enough. And it just, we had such a blast with that character. He was so over-the-top ridiculous. It's incredible. Rob, that's a great call. Interestingly enough, we are going to watch along from Barry Gordy's Last Dragon, the final fight scene between what he called Bruce Leroy and Shownuff, the Shogun of Harlem. Now, I'm hesitant to do this because Jason's never actually seen the movie. And to understand how we got here, you really got to watch the rest of the movie to kind of understand the characters. But I don't think it'll take away from it watching it, because the final fight scene is just so incredibly great. It's like it's 80s. Cheese to the max.
Yeah. So I'll give Cliff Notes version of how we get here. So Bruce Leroy is the hero of the movie. He is coming to rescue. I forgot Vanity's
character. Vanity.
Yeah. He's coming to rescue her. Okay. And she's been kidnapped by this evil record executive guy, and he's coming to rescue her. And the evil record executive guy has hired Shownuff to basically take out Bruce Leroy. Which is something Shownuff has always wanted to do. And so we come to this scene. Bruce Leroy is coming to rescue Laura. That's her name. And then he's beating Shownuff's goons, and then he runs into Shownuff, and then the fight is on.
Okay. So I know you guys, we usually do these watch alongs on the Peacock, so you may not be able to watch this along with us. But if you've seen the movie, you know what we're talking about. We're actually pulling this off of a YouTube clip that Rob shared. I've got mine pulled up. Rob, Jason, do you guys have yours pulled up?
Yeah, actually.
I can pin the clip to the top of my Twitter and my Blue Sky or something.
Absolutely. Pin that to the top of your Twitter, or app formerly known as Twitter. Pin it there. People can go at Jedi Fett, JEDIFETT. You can go check that out there. Jason will have it pinned on his profile for a little bit. And yeah, you can watch it there. If you've never seen the movie, please go find it on streaming somewhere. Pick it up in the bin, at the DVD bin, whatever. It's just a great little fun 80s romp. Guys, you let me know when you're ready and we'll do the countdown.
All right, let's do it.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
This is Bruce Leroy.
Yeah, that's Bruce Leroy and the Shogun.
That's Leroy's old brother.
Yeah. Holy shit. How many Oscars did they win?
All of them.
Not enough. Fine. And here we go. And you got
the movie wasn't filmed in the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah. And they're circling each other.
Yeah. Shonovsky is pretty awesome. Holy shit.
He just blocked everything. He just
yep. Now, this and Jason, when we talked earlier.
He's talking shit to him.
Oh, yeah, he's a shit talker. Oh, the hero's making a comeback.
The hero's coming back. Oh my god, the claw.
Great. Not the tiger claw.
Whoa! Bruce Leroy just went through a wall.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
He's not there. Where did he go?
Where'd he go? He obviously used the
show. This is Leroy's little brother.
Yeah. Because Leroy locked him behind the fence to keep him from getting hurt, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
And just
commercial. I just got hit with commercial. I hate you, YouTube. Skip the ad.
I got the premium off all of it. All right. You all got to get through commercial.
I'm back.
All right.
It's only like 3 seconds and it skipped the ad. I could skip the ad.
Okay. I said, I was looking for him. Like, where'd he go? Boom.
Sound effects and all.
Oh, now here's where it gets really good. Because he thinks he's down, and he's thinking, okay, I got him. It's over. Let me get out of here.
And there's the obligatory blood for Jason.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And now he's gone.
Where'd he go? Uh-oh. Soundtrack's incredible, by the way. That synth is...
They've got a scene somewhere about halfway through where Vanity is singing. She's like a up and coming pop singer. Oh. It's so bad, it's good.
Whoa!
Uh oh!
He's just karate magic.
There.
Yes. Many times over.
he's got the glow.
His hands are glowing. And Bruce Leroy is paralyzed in fear. What? He's got lightning hands? Holy shit, this is so stupid. I love it.
He's getting shit out of him now.
Show enough.
Whoa, Bruce Leroy.
We've got a balcony bump.
Bruce Leroy would have been a good wrestler.
Oh, and the guy playing him is like the real, he's a real life black belt type of dude.
Yeah. He went on to be co-star with Bruce Campbell in Briscoe County.
Yeah, and of course now he's got to rip the guy's top off so everybody can see.
Yeah.
And now he's smacking him around. He's just beating the shit out of him.
Classic.
So this whole movie is basically both of these guys claiming to be the best karate man in Harlem.
Yeah.
And this is the final fight for that title. Yeah.
I shoveled him in the water, and now. And now Leroy is getting his revelation that, you know.
That he knows. Whoa.
Now we get the slow-mo pulling out of the
Yeah.
Whoa.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
He only has karate powers. Jesus. The effects are incredible. Uh-oh.
Here it is. The big superhero comeback.
Yeah.
Shogun's karate magic's not working. Oh, he gets sparks. It's pretty badass. Dang. He's whooping Shonuff's ass. God bless the emotions. Wow. The laser effects are incredible.
And right into the bucket, in the big bucket of the water he goes.
Beautiful. Was he dead?
That leaves it ambiguous. Nah, he's not dead.
He pulls him out, yeah. Or at least he...
Oh, but don't forget. Movie ends with a hate crime? He shot him in the head, dude.
But did he?
Yeah. There's going to be some ninja magic here.
Remember, we've got lightning hands now.
Yeah, exactly. He caught it in his mouth. That is so weird.
Mm.
This is so dumb.
And then he pantses him and hangs him up by the hook.
And that's the end of the thing. That's the end of the video over here.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. We've reached the end of the watch along.
So yeah, you need to watch the whole thing. I wanted to
do show. I?
Yes, you do.
So what did you think?
It was a movie.
Jason's a little young for that one, Rob. You can fully appreciate the artistry that is Barry Gordon's Last Dragon.
Jeez.
But you can see where Rob was coming from with the Shogun of Harlem being a purely a wrestling character.
Yes. He was talking shit. Like mid-match.
When you watch the movie, you get a better sense of what Rob means. Because that little 9-minute video is cool enough, but to get an understanding of where Rob's coming from, you got to watch the whole movie.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because he's cutting promos on people the whole movie, man.
Oh, yeah, it's incredible.
Awesome.
Guys, I think that's going to do it for another episode of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. This was a lot of fun tonight. This really was.
Yeah.
I'm glad we did this because I think we all needed this week.
Yep.
So let's get out of here. Let's go back around the room. Thank my co-host like I always do, starting with Jason. Sir, go watch that movie. I'm serious.
Yeah, go watch the whole thing.
We didn't even talk about Crown Jewel.
Who cares, man?
No, we didn't talk about Crown Jewel. We didn't get a chance. If you want to hear that, Tunney and I did a post Crown Jewel show. You can go listen to that on the Chairshot Radio Network. It's actually a really good episode. Tunney and I had a lot of fun with it. Real quick before we get out of here, I do want to apologize to not only you, the listeners, but to the Three Count Thursday guys. We did not get to get into the drink topic. We may put a pin in that and save it for next week. We just ran a little long tonight, so we didn't get to talk about that. Again, I thank them for that contribution and apologize to you, the listeners, for not getting into that topic tonight, but maybe we'll put a pin in that and come back to it. From the Rob the Genius podcast, the host there, Rob, sir, fun night tonight.
Yes, it was, and we all needed it, so I'm glad to,
I'm glad for
the audience to just do something fun for you guys.
Yeah, and hope everybody enjoyed it. Maybe some of our movies made your list if you're a fan of, the DC animated universe. I'm DJ, the man with the award-winning and holy beard. Again, thank you all for listening as always. Remember, you can call it pro wrestling. You can call it sports entertainment. You can call it whatever you want, but call it in the ring, and we're out of here until next week.